And of course, our guest this hour is Jim Marrs. We're going to come back and talk about his latest work, Our Occulted History: Do the Global Elite Conceal Ancient Aliens? Welcome back, Jim Marrs with us. Jim, with Our Occulted History, the subtitle is very intriguing. Do the Global Elite Conceal Ancient Aliens? Tell me about that.
Right. Well, that there is so much evidence that there seems to be all of these anomalies. Anomalies, you know, of course, are just a scientific word for, in the computer lingo, it's WTF, right? It's like, what's this? They don't know. So they call it an anomaly. But there's all kinds of things happening. Even Carl Sagan, early on in his career, along with Russian scientists, decided that the Martian moon Phobos gave signs of being hollow. And as Sagan pointed out, a hollow object cannot be a natural object. And then that leads to, things you've talked about extensively with a variety of speakers, the Cydonia region of Mars, where what they believe are pyramids, and of course the famous or infamous face on Mars, and then there's the moon Iapetus, which kind of intrigues me because when you see the close-up photographs of it, there's like a ridge or a mountain ring and we've all seen mountains, but this one goes right around the equator of this little moon. Plus, there's a giant round crater on it. And when you look at the pictures of Iapetus, it looks nothing less than like the Death Star in Star Wars, you know. And how do we know that some extraterrestrial advanced civilization didn't take a moon and hollow it out? And in fact, this seems to be what may have happened with our own moon, because we have these oceans called the Maria, on the moon, and then under these circular oceans are these dense objects that we know because of radar, penetrating radar, and it's called mascons, and they're heavy metallic type objects. We don't even know what they are since they're on the inside of the moon. But early on, before we went there, the idea was that there was volcanic activity on the moon, and it spewed out all this molten rock. Because what we do know is that the harder, denser elements are on the outside of the moon. In fact, some people have theorized that the moon itself may be hollow. I know I had a chance to talk with Dr. Edgar Mitchell, the sixth astronaut. Apollo 14. He was the sixth man to walk on the moon. And I asked him, you know, what do you think about the idea that the moon may be hollow? Well, initially he laughed and said, I scoffed. No, the moon's not hollow. But then he went on and said, however, we do believe there may be giant caverns inside the moon. Well, excuse me, George, giant caverns or hollow moon, what's the difference?
Yeah, really.
We're talking about empty space inside the moon. And so with the and then there's, of course, all of these NASA photographs that I've seen. You can find them on the Internet. And lots of people say, oh, look, there's a lizard or a Coke can or a, you know, some kind of ape or something. Who knows? That has never impressed me. But what does impress me is there are many photographs that are obviously painted over or blacked out, blanked out.
Very strange.
Smudgy places where it's obvious somebody's covered up something. So I think there's every reason to believe that there may have been this extraterrestrial visitation in our distant past. And of course, then you get to our own Earth, and we find that every ancient culture in the world, from the Chinese to the ancient Sumerians to even the Aborigines and in Australia and the Dogon tribe in Africa and the Mayans and Incas and American Native Americans, they all have ancient stories of the gods that came from the skies. And then we have all of these mysterious places on the earth. I, not too long back, visited in Egypt and went to see for myself the vertical water erosion, very prominent on the Sphinx and even can be discerned on the Great Pyramid. Well, the only way that could happen is if they set out under heavy rains. And yet the geologists tell us there's not been any heavy rains on the Giza Plateau for more than 10,000 years. So that means the Sphinx and the Great Pyramid were built more than 10,000 years ago, which, of course, leaves out the Egyptians. And, of course, you'll run into all kinds of arguments because there's a whole industry, not to mention a nation, that counts on this Egyptian history.
And of course, yeah.
The ancient Egyptians are a wondrous civilization, and they're great, but they just don't want to be it known that they were simply holdovers from an even earlier civilization.
Well, this concealment, why would they conceal? Why not just come public and tell us, hey, you know, we've been visited, we probably are still being visited, and that's the way it is?
Well, I think it comes back to the same reason that they're covering up the reality of UFOs. George, you've been at it long enough. Don't you agree that there is definitely something to the UFO mystery?
Yes, absolutely.
There's something there, right?
Yep.
Yep. Okay, well, why are they covering that up? Well, the same reason, because the people who are actually running this country, the people who are running the multinational banks, that are running the gun running, running the drugs, doing everything, they don't care if we know that we've been visited by aliens, or that maybe even that aliens may still be coming around. That doesn't bother them so much. What they don't want people to know is if we know that our history is something different and that there was exotic advanced technology in use in our prehistory and that is probably still in use today vis-a-vis the UFOs, then we would know that we do not have to remain dependent on their petroleum-based economy. And the whole thing,
that's
the whole
true.
Game would be up. Their whole usurious Ponzi scheme of printing up paper and telling us it's money would fall apart, and they would lose tremendous amounts of their money and, more importantly, their power over us.
Well, they sure would. There's no doubt about that. Jim, let's talk about some interesting things with regards to, of course, this, and then get into this Planet X situation as well.
I definitely want to talk about that because here's a classic example of how they're keeping things from us.
Some people think that everything that's been going on has to do with demons, that they're not extraterrestrials. They're more spiritual demons. What do you think of that?
Well, that's all a matter of semantics and interpretation. George, let's say you and I and another fella are walking through the woods, and a little diminutive greenish figure runs in front of our path and runs off into the woods. The guy with us, he may see, wow, I just saw a demon. And you might say, well, I think I just saw an alien. And I might say, I think I saw a leprechaun. Okay? The reality is there. It's the interpretation and the semantics based on every individual's knowledge and experience and philosophy that determines what we think something is. The thing is about now, keep in mind, I'm not trying to dismiss the idea of a spiritual realm. I happen to believe there is such a thing. In fact, I know there is, having dealt with the remote viewing phenomena, which is where our highly trained soldiers for the U.S. Army, for the Intelligence Security Command, were using psychic techniques to go and look at things all around the world. And I wrote about that. And I have researched that, and I've even practiced some of that, and I know it works. And I know that there is a spiritual aspect to the universe. But then, after all, the universe is nothing but a huge expanse of energy. And we are energy beings. We know this. Science knows this. They know that the human body is surrounded with an energy field. The New Age type people call it the aura.
Sure.
Again, it doesn't matter what you call it. It's the reality.
It's there.
We have an energy field, and it interacts with everybody, every other individual's energy field. And then what's really amazing, George, is they have done studies and showed that when a person dies, this energy field does not just dissipate, you know, it lifts up and it moves off and it goes somewhere else. So, you know, that should be a great comfort to a lot of people if you understand that when you die, you don't cease to exist. You just go do something else on the energy realm.
Well, there's no doubt that something's been happening on this planet since its inception. And,
right. But the good news is that even if there has been extraterrestrial intervention in the earliest development of human civilization and of mankind, humankind, the good news is that I don't think that the agenda is to attack us and blow up our cities or eat us or anything like that.
They would have done that,
or, like we see in movies like, you know, the Independence Day, and, you know, they blow up the White House and they, you know, have a big fight. I don't think that's the deal, because if that was their purpose or their goal, since the historical record shows that this has been going on as far back as there is human memory, then they should have done that years ago, when they all we would have to fight them is swords or bows and arrows or something. You know, why wait until we have laser technology and space platforms, you know, to try to attack us? So I don't think we have to be fearful of an alien attack, except unless it's a false flag being perpetrated by people on the Earth who want us to think we're being invaded.
That's possible.
Yeah, it's very possible. I mean, you know, it has to get bigger and bigger. They simply burned a building down in 1933, and that was the German Reichstag, their parliament, and that set the course for the Third Reich. And then they blew down three buildings in New York on 2001 and blamed it on somebody else, and that set us on the course on the war on terrorism. And so the next one's going to have to be even bigger and better, so it probably will be an attack on the Earth.
Do they think people are easily swayed?
Well, I ask you, George, aren't they?
Yeah. Most of them. I don't think people who listen to this program are.
I don't think they are either.
Yeah, I think they're sharp.
That's what's pretty amazing. Everybody I've ever met who has listened, maybe not regularly, but at least often to Coast, they generally, they got one eye open and their brain's functioning.
Yeah, they really are. I mean, they've got that leery eye about certain things, and they're aware of that. But I think the general population, I think they can be misled.
Oh, very. Unfortunately, it's very easy to do so. And the thing is, they have so many sophisticated methods of doing that today. I mean, television, if you'll simply go Google 4S technology, SSSS technology, just go look that up. That is just the electronic and electromagnetic energy coming off of TVs and things like that that can actually alter the brain, and they can actually send subliminal messages through this SSSS technology. Now, if that's not bad enough, that's not even getting into some of the absolutely ludicrous programming that we're subjected to, that is conditioning everybody, setting certain objectives. The media, see, cannot tell you how to think, but it certainly can tell you what to think about. And how to think about it, you know, how we want to think about it. This is why it's been so easy to, I would simply paraphrase Hermann Goering, who was the chief of the Nazi Luftwaffe at Nuremberg. He said, well, it's easy to get people to go to war. You know, all you have to do is tell them they're being attacked and that you'll protect them, and then slander the people who are opposed as pacifist and unpatriotic. And I submit to you, isn't that pretty much the way it works?
Yeah, it happens that way all the time, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Jim, with these visitations that have been ongoing, how have they been able to be relatively secret?
Well, they have help. Number one, they have technology that, I'll give you one experience I had. I was at Gulf Breeze, Florida, and with some other people very prominent in the UFO field, and we were at a big hotel for a UFO conference, and I was just checking out everything that was going on, and I went with some people next door to a diner for some lunch, and we just had a regular lunch and sitting there, and there were some other people in the diner, and they got up and left, and we then made our way back to the hotel, but when we got back to the convention, there was this buzz going on, and it seems that somebody had just gotten a film or a videotape of a UFO. And so, you know, my journalistic hackles jumped up, and I went and found these people, and they said, yeah, you come up to our room, we'll show you the video. And it turns out they had been sitting next to us in this cafe, and when they got up to leave, they walked out the door. The guy saw this thing in the air, and he whipped his camera up, and he took a video of it. And this was really interesting because when I saw the video, I certainly recognized the scene, and I knew that was exactly what I saw when I came out of this cafe. I also knew that, you know, less than an hour had gone by. There was no way somebody could have taken this and had the time to doctor it or try to run it through Photoshop or something. And so what I saw was a long silver cigar-shaped object. In fact, actually, my first impression was that it was an airliner. But then I noticed I couldn't see any tail, and it was pretty low, and it was coming in over this harbor. And I also couldn't see any wings, but I was thinking, well, I'm looking at it from the side, and, you know, the wings are parallel with my eyes, and I just can't see it. And then it rolled, and it looked like it was metallic, and it was picking up glints of sunlight as it rolled, and then it disappeared. I mean, it just stopped, and yet you could still see the waves in the air going. You know, you could see a little like prop wash, they called it, behind it, and then when it disappeared, though, the trail kept going. So to me, it seemed like they were able to turn on their cloaking device or whatever, and they just went invisible. So you ask, how is it that we don't see them? There you go. You know, just maybe only on certain occasions, or something goes wrong, or somebody flips the wrong switch, do they become visible. And then, of course, you have, as you're well aware now, George, thanks to so many people that have been on your show, a concerted effort on the part of government to act like this isn't happening and deny everything.
Sure, and they're doing a great job doing that.
Yes, exactly. In fact, that was the official posture going back into the early 50s, which is denial and ridicule. You didn't see anything, and if you persist in saying you did, then you may need psychiatric help. And I think this is unconscionable because there have been so many people's lives who've been ruined because their family won't accept what they've seen. Their friends laugh at them. It's just not right, okay? And yet that's exactly what they've done. And as you said, it's been quite effective. Most people, when I wrote my book, The Alien Agenda, which is now, I've been told, the top-selling nonfiction book on UFOs in the world.
Sure is.
I was amazed at how many people I personally knew came up to me and said, well, hey, let me tell you what happened to me, or let me tell you what I saw. And I said, well, wow, I've known you all my life. How come you never told me this before? And they said, well, you know, we didn't think you'd believe me. And think how many people are in that same situation. Think, you know, if you want to get a handle on how pervasive this UFO phenomena is, just start going around talking to all your friends, particularly older people, and ask them, you know, what do you think about UFOs? And make it clear that you're not in any kind of judgmental mode. You're not going to make any judgment about it. You simply want to know. And you'll be amazed at the number of people who will start telling you stories about what their parents saw, or what their uncles or aunts saw, or what they saw. You know, it's really out there. It's just kind of like the skeleton in the closet. It's something we don't want to talk about.
Let's talk about that Planet X, Jim, when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, Jim Barr's with us. We're going to talk about what could be Planet X out there, and we'll take your calls as well. Welcome back, Jim Barr's with us. Jim, an object approaching the solar system, what's happening? We're not talking about Comet Ison now, are we?
No. Well, this is pretty interesting. If you go to Wikipedia and you type in Nibiru, N-I-B-I-R-U, you come up with a page where they tell you that this is a supposed disastrous large planetary object that's on a collision course or near-miss course to the Earth, blah, blah. And they said it was this idea was first put forward in 1995 by a Wisconsin woman who said she'd been contacted by aliens and that blah, blah. And it goes on from there, and you got to protect your pets, and it just goes on, and it would make the casual reader just go, well, wait a minute, this is just a bunch of baloney. But actually, the truth is, and this is a good example of how they distract you, send you off on a wild goose case, tell you there's nothing there, folks. Actually, the search for an unknown planet in the solar system goes all the way back to at least 1843, when British astronomer John Adams deduced from noticeable gravitational disturbances that another planet must lie outside the orbit of Uranus. Okay? Now, the thing is, this is still going on because in just last year, in National Geographic News, it was reported that a new planet may have been found in our solar system and that odd orbits of remote asteroids in the Kuiper Belt might give evidence of an unseen world. This is all the way back to up to 2012. And, of course, the term Nibiru, that comes from translations of the ancient Sumerian tablets, which predate the Bible by thousands of years. In fact, a lot of the Bible, especially in the Old Testament, is based on the Sumerian accounts of various things. For example, the Great Flood. The Sumerian accounts give the exact same story that Genesis does, the only exceptions being that the name in the Sumerian tablets, it's Upnapishtim, and in the Bible, of course, it's Noah. One other thing I might mention that always intrigues me is that in the Bible it says Noah took two of every animal, which has always bothered me. Back in Baptist Sunday school, I always wondered how, you know, the lions and the tigers and the sheep and the gazelles.
I think he probably took DNA or something.
Yeah, exactly. Well, in the Sumerian tablets, it says that this God told Upnapishtim to take the seed of every living thing. And since those tablets talk about the DNA and about genetic manipulation and breeding, then it's possible that what they were talking about was the taking DNA samples of everything to replenish the earth after the flood. But anyway, so they refer to Nibiru as a planet that's on a 3,600-year orbit that goes way outside the solar system and then circles back through. As in 1981, scientists were theorizing the existence of a 10th planet. Now we know there's only 9 planets because poor Pluto, it got demoted from a full-fledged planet to a dwarf planet.
A planetoid.
Yeah. Well, actually, now Pluto, I guess, is just relegated to being Mickey Mouse's dog, right?
Yeah.
So, but anyway, they really think that there's something out there. And in fact, Hugh McCann for the Detroit News wrote, he said, if the new evidence from the U.S. Naval Observatory of a 10th planet in the solar system is correct, it could prove that the Sumerians were far ahead of modern man in astronomy. But see, it's this kind of thing that the people who want to control everybody and want to control our history and control our perceptions, they don't want us knowing things like this. But I think it's really interesting that the Vatican, which seems to be on top of this pretty much, and by the way, the Vatican, through several people, including Monsignor Balducci, have made public statements that, yes, aliens could be real, and aliens are not demons, and they're just other people. And the Vatican also has a very modern observatory, I believe in New Mexico or Arizona.
Arizona,
that's right. And then, but they've also built one at the South Pole. And we have a new observatory at the South Pole. And this really intrigues me because the people who are really up on the Nibiru 10th planet theories and I'm sure you've had some of them on your show, and probably have more. They say that, when it finally comes from around the sun and we're able to see it, it's going to be seen best from the southern hemisphere. So I find it very intriguing that both the Vatican and the U.S. have a big modern observatories down in Antarctica.
Well, something's out there, Jim. It's just
something's
a matter of
going
what.
On. Yeah. Now, this brings up global warming, which I think is a just a con job, basically. Obviously, something's happening. We've had extreme weather here in Texas. We've had fires and heat in California. We've had heavy snows. The ice is either it expands and then it retracts. There is obviously climate change. Okay, but it's not global warming, not when you look at it all the way over. And the main thing is global warming was a scam to try to push through a United Nations carbon tax. So, again, a money deal, okay? And interestingly enough, the people, the biggest proponents of climate change or global warming were the very people who were investing themselves in a carbon tax stock market, a market out of Chicago. But anyway, the environment is changing. But what I want to point out is it's not just the Earth. The polar caps on Mars are diminishing, and it's been noticed that there's ice melting and receding on some of the moons of Jupiter, and some of the outer planets like Pluto, Uranus, they seem to be becoming brighter, which means they may be heating up some. And so whatever is going on is affecting the entire solar system. And what could that be? Well, we don't know. Some people say, well, it's just erratic sunspots and sun activity, which is possible. But it is also possible that this is the disturbances being caused by this other planet, this Nibiru, as the Sumerians called it, that is approaching our solar system. And there are now people who are saying that they've actually been able to photograph this thing as it approaches the sun. But, of course, for every person who says, I think I can see it, you got somebody else, either real or genuinely or hired to say, no, that's not it. It's lens flare, or it's just this, that, and the other thing. So as far as I'm concerned, the jury is kind of out, but I think there's something happening, and I'd like to know, what it is. Unfortunately, George, when you and I were young men, we always thought we could turn to the government, like in the form of NASA, and say, okay, well, what's the straight scientific dope on this? You know, what do we know? But as you say in some of your promos, you can't tell anymore.
You can't. You really can't. Jim, let's take a few calls. Folks are lining up for you. We'll go, first of all, to Don in Salem, Oregon, west of the Rockies. Don, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Howdy, guys.
Howdy.
Three real quick things, George. I heard from a Martian dressed in a bunny suit that you guys might be coming up here next year.
We're working on that.
the bunny suit and, like, last year's Halloween show, put those two together. The other one is Obama. I wrote down 28 things he's directly responsible for. People ought to be screaming. And for you, Jim, what do you think wrecked Mars? Stripped off the atmosphere, most of the atmosphere, and turned it red and all that stuff. And thank you for your time, guys.
You got it.
Oh, well, interestingly enough, caller, according to the Sumerian tablets, that was Mars was devastated by the passing of Nibiru, or the 10th planet, on one of the times it came through. In fact, according to the Sumerian tablets, originally there was no Earth. There was, in our solar system, there was Mercury, and then there was Venus, and then there was Mars. And Mars was a very watery and inhabitable world. And then you got to the big planets. Oh, and then past Mars was a big, huge planet that was known as the the watery planet. It was a very
Earth-like.
Earth-like, yes. And according, whoa! I just spilt water all over me.
You know what? I thought something happened to you. I thought somebody busted in and got you or something.
So apparently, the story is that this watery world called Tiamat. When Nibiru came through, it was dragging some moons with it, and one of the moons struck Tiamat and shattered this huge big planet, which was like maybe four times larger than the Earth, and half of it just disintegrated but remained in its original orbit. And this is, of course, what we know as the asteroid belt. The other half of Tiamat was knocked past the orbit of Mars and went into orbit between Mars and Venus and coalesced into the Earth. And this is why they've been finding these Martian life and Martian rocks on the Earth. And this is why the water, they talked about the mingling of the water. This is where all this water came on the Earth. Now, I'm just telling you what they've described in Sumerian tablets. I can't tell you if that's true or not, but it certainly makes a lot of sense. And, of course, this happened like hundreds of thousands of years ago.
Well, sure does. Okay, next up we go to Teresa in Topeka. That's in Kansas. Hi, Teresa.
Hi, George. Hi, Jim. My question was, what do you think the connection with Nibiru or Planet X is with the Anunnaki?
Okay, according to the Sumerian tablets, and of course, Zachariah Sitchin and his several books based on his translations and interpretations of the Sumerian tablets, says the Anunnaki were these inhabitants of Nibiru, who, as Nibiru gets close enough to our solar system, they have the technology to fly and to go through space and to come through the Great Bracelet, as they call the asteroid belt, and then come to the Earth. And they came to the Earth, and they landed in the Persian Gulf, and they began to set up a colony, and they began to create a civilization, which eventually led to the first known great civilization, which was Sumer, or the Sumerians. And of course, some of the critics have claimed that, you can't even find the word Anunnaki in the Sumerian tablets, but that's not true. You can find it. You can find it under the Anu, and of course, I think Sitchin and others have taken the liberty of making it the plural, Anu, the Anu gods, as the Anunnaki, as referring to all of them. But interestingly, the ancient Sumerians did not really refer to them as gods. They just wrote down the Anunnaki came and they did this and they did that. Actually, if you want to find the whole story, you can find it in the Encyclopedia Britannica. The only thing is, it's in the interpretation, because in Encyclopedia Britannica, you have to look up Sumerian mythology. And of course, a lot of this, when it finally got written down, was by people in a degraded society who didn't understand all of the things. Today, we understand DNA. We understand gene splicing. We understand in vitro fertilization. We understand flight. You know, but like when these tablets were being translated, beginning in the 1800s, they didn't believe that heavier-than-air flight was possible, and they certainly didn't know about DNA. So when they read about these Anunnaki flying through the air and being able to destroy whole cities with a single weapon and being able to improve the breed of certain species, including humans, they just said, well, this is their mythology. These are their gods. So what's happening today is not necessarily different translations. The translations are all pretty much in agreement. It's the interpretation. Up until recently, it was thought this was just mythology, kind of like Zeus and Odin and all like that. And yet, when you go back and you find that actually all of those old mythologies pretty well fit together, and they all describe the same types of individuals and personalities. So it could be that they were all talking about the Anunnaki all along, But we didn't understand that because we were interpreting it as mythological characters. And now a growing number of people and researchers are beginning to think that these ancients were actually telling us what they knew to be the truth.
How exciting is it, Jim, investigating these stories? Isn't it something?
It's really fascinating, I'll say that. And because, for one thing, you know, you hear some crazy cockamamie story like the Anunnaki, and you go, well, that's kind of nuts. Where are they getting that? But then you dig into it, and if you'll actually study it and then go, and don't just read the proponents, read the opponents too, you know, and read what everybody has to say, and then you'll start digging it out. It's just like I read one of the biggest critics of Sitchin, and he says, well, he's all wet because, the ancient Sumerian tablets don't even mention the Anunnaki. Well, yes, they do. he just made it into a plural. They talk about the Anu gods. It's the same thing, okay? So the more you dig, the more you can get to the truth of matters.
All right, stay with us because we're coming back to talk about the banking cartel on Coast to Coast AM.